Hello, and welcome back to Small World, Big Problems. This is a podcast from the Philip Merrill Center for Strategic Studies at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies in Washington, D.C. My name is Eli George, and I'll be your host for today. Now, this episode is one that, frankly, I am very excited for. Our guest is Jakov Milatović, the president of Montenegro. He was in the United States recently for a visit to the NATO Youth Summit in Miami, Florida, and he also had a quick trip up to Washington, D.C. As part of this trip, he had a speaking arrangement at the Seiss Bloomberg Center in Washington, and we were able to snag him for a little bit beforehand to talk about his life, his policies, and his goals for his country. While Montenegro isn't a country that often comes up in American news media, it still is a really important country in the Western Balkans and in Southeast Europe more broadly. It's a member of NATO and will soon be a member of the European Union. Now, this was a really exciting opportunity, and it led to a really, I thought, engaging conversation. So I hope you sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Welcome back to Small World, Big Problems. Today we have a very special guest that I am very excited for, the president of Montenegro, Jakov Milatović. President Milatović, welcome to Washington and welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So we are recording right now on May 16th of 2024. Just a few days ago, you were a speaker at the NATO Youth Summit in Miami, Florida. That's an event that brings together young people from all over NATO. You were a keynote speaker there. What was your main message to the crowd?
Well, I was going through the history of NATO and discussing about it with the young people, with the future of the NATO alliance. And I think that one of the main conclusions is that, the future of the NATO is going to be depending on them. And hopefully, you know, some of the key takeaways from the discussion are going to be helping them, you know, to be able to shape our future in a better way. I think that the NATO alliance is the greatest military alliance, geopolitical alliance in the world, and Montenegro was able to join the alliance back in 2017. I think it was one of the best decisions of our country over the last 20 years. As the youngest head of a NATO member, I was very happy to have the opportunity to discuss NATO, to discuss geopolitical challenges with the young people during the NATO Youth Summit. I think that the key message that I provided to them is that integrity is the underlying factor for success for, you know, whatever they do in life, as well as for the success of our NATO alliance. I think that what is, you know, very specific about our alliance is that it is ultimately driven by democratic institutions. And the key underlying factor behind democratic institutions is integrity. And I think that was really the key message.
Yeah, and I think that's really important for an institution like NATO. It's not just an alliance of convenience, it's an alliance of shared values, shared democratic values, shared values of integrity.
Absolutely. And I think that's exactly the difference between NATO and all other military alliances throughout the world. I think this is why NATO overlived the Warsaw Pact. And I think, you know, this is why NATO will be able to shape the world in the future as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that you had mentioned was that you're the youngest leader in NATO. You're 37 years old. As an American, I have to say I'm a little bit jealous. We have two 80-year-old men who are running for president. And it's exciting to see people from the younger generation taking these leadership roles. What advantages do you think that youth brings to leading a country?
Well, you know, I entered the country politics when I was, I think, 34.
Okay.
So I became an economy minister a few years ago. In a very, very difficult time for the country. It was the time when the country was hit by COVID, as the world was hit by COVID. And I think when I got the offer to join the government back then, I was really, you know, thinking that was the unique opportunity for me to be able to give back to my community, mm-hmm. to give back through the education as well as the professional experience that I got by living and studying abroad. And, ultimately, I believe that I brought the fresh point of view into the Montenegrin politics. The one which was not also connected to the ugly 90s. And, you know, in the Balkans, the 90s were really ugly. I think also, you know, what I mentioned is that I brought this foreign experience, both academic as well as professional, which mattered. It mattered a lot for myself when I was the economy minister. It mattered a lot when I entered the presidential race. And it mattered, you know, in terms of myself being able to shape the policy in the right manner. And I think this is ultimately, you know, what was also very much appreciated by the people. This is why I was able to get probably the highest political legitimacy in the history of our country by defeating my predecessor last year during the presidential elections when I got 60% of the votes at a turnout of 75%.
Oh, wow.
And I think, you know, this is what I'm very proud of. And I think that was very important for the democratic development of Montenegro, as well as, you know, a very positive image that Montenegro was able to send out to the rest of the world.
Yeah, and what you said about giving back to the community and giving back to the country, I think, really resonates, because a lot of people here at SAIS, students here at SAIS, want to do that. They want to go into public service. Some of them want to go into politics. Most people here, students here, are about, you know, 25, 26, so you're about a decade older than them, and you're already president. Do you have any advice for people who are at the start of their careers who want to get involved in politics?
Well, my advice is to get experience before they enter the politics. I think, you know, that was really part of my successful political career. You know, I think my ability, which I already mentioned, to bring some of the experience that I acquired abroad back to Montenegro. And I think, you know, that's a very valuable advice. You know, after finishing school, it is important to get some real experience in the private sector, in international financial organizations, in different, you know, think tanks, whatever. I think acquiring knowledge through work is very important before entering politics. And that would be my advice. I think that entering politics is important for all those who really want to change and shape their communities, shape the world. But, you know, do it properly. That's my advice.
Yeah, that is good advice. Now, I'd like to turn to some policy questions, and I want to start with NATO, which is something we talked about a little bit already. Later this year is the 75th anniversary summit, which will be in D.C. There will be a lot of world leaders there, President Biden, yourself. Montenegro is a relatively recent addition to NATO, but what has being in NATO meant to Montenegro?
As I said, I think that joining NATO for Montenegro was one of the two key foreign policy priorities over the last almost two decades since we got independence in 2006. And I think that, you know, what we have achieved is really the guarantee of our sovereignty, and that's important. And it's especially important in a very turbulent region such as the Balkans. So that's number one. Number two is for sure sort of a maturity. And even I think, you know, Montenegro joining NATO was also a driver of different democratic developments that ultimately followed up. So democratic consolidation is number two. And number three is definitely predictability. Predictability when it comes to certain institutions. And why is that important? It is important also for economic development. It is important generally for the foreign policy. And I think, you know, those three are the key benefits of Montenegro joining the NATO. And I think ultimately we also brought, you know, a bit more stability to the region. When Montenegro joined NATO back in 2017, it was for the first time, I think after the Roman times, that the Northern Mediterranean was together part of one, you know, security alliance.
That's a really good point. I guess it has been a while since that's happened. I mean, and it is good to see, like you said, it's bringing more stability to the region. And I think your point about helping it reinforce democratic institutions is really important. NATO doesn't just rely on democracy, but it also projects democracy and builds democracy.
This is what I exactly, you know, said at the beginning of our discussion. You know, ultimately, what is really different about NATO, it is the fact that NATO is the alliance of democratic countries. And democratic countries rely on their democratic institutions. And I think this is ultimately really also what matters to me. It matters to me personally. This is why I came back to Montenegro to do politics, in order to pursue democratic development and to foster democratic development of Montenegro. And by doing that, also promoting democratic development of the rest of the Balkan region.
Yeah. Now, there is another international institution that Montenegro is in the process of joining, and that is the European Union. They've been sort of on the application track for a little while now, probably going to be having accession into the European Union later this decade. I'm going to ask you the same question. What would being in the European Union mean for Montenegro?
Oh, a lot. I think, you know, this is the second priority of our foreign policy after the first one being achieved through our NATO membership. We are a candidate country. Mm-hmm. We have been negotiating with the EU for more than 10 years. And currently, we are the most advanced out of 10 candidate countries. This is why we do believe that we are going to be joining the EU, hopefully, soon enough. The current projection, at least on the side of Montenegro, is the ability of Montenegro to become the 28th member state of the EU as of 2028. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, this is the message that has been resonating with the decision makers in the EU as well, especially following certain geopolitical changes. And this is where I mean the Russian war of aggression on Ukraine. I believe that there was a wake-up call in Brussels, because it was really that moment when the decision makers in the EU also understood that the enlargement of the EU is also about the security of the European continent. So this is why I always say that accession of Montenegro into the EU would be a story much bigger than Montenegro itself, because as the most advanced country, the EU would be able also to show to the other candidate countries that the accession is alive, that the enlargement is alive. And I think that would be an important message for everybody else, that reforms pay off, that political, a new different political culture pays off. And this is ultimately what I'm also, on a daily basis fighting for.
And how do the people of Montenegro view the European Union? Are they interested in joining, or do they not really care?
Well, very much. I think that if there is one common denominator among the people in the country as well as among the political actors, it is the country joining the EU. So more than 80% of the people are supportive of that cause. And I think this is also one of the reasons why the politicians need to do as much as possible in order to realize that goal.
International institutions being weakened nowadays, that countries are wanting to look more inward. And it really does sound like Montenegro is a country that wants to look outward and wants to become a part of these institutions, that wants to build international cooperation.
Of course. And not only that, but, you know, if you really sort of carefully read a number of international reports, then you also realize that democracy in general is under the threat across the world. Mm-hmm. And I think that even Freedom House recently published a report with the title "Democracy is in Decline." And I think this is why the story of Montenegro, which, is having this opposite trend of a country which is now having a more vivid democratic life, is the story that needs to be told. And this is an important story.
Yeah, it is really exciting to see. What challenges do you think Montenegro has to deal with in order to become part of the European Union? Or I guess I should ask, are there challenges that you would have to deal with?
Well, of course. I mean, there are always challenges. I think that probably the biggest one is still in the area of the rule of law. Joining the EU is ultimately about bringing the quality of your institutions to the levels that exist at the European standard. So the rule of law is probably a key challenge which the country is trying to overcome. I think that we were able relatively well to pursue that challenge over the last few months. Now, I think it's going to be soon the case that this is going to be assessed by the European Commission. And we are very much looking forward to that assessment, as hopefully a positive assessment would also mean another step towards the country's road vis-a-vis the EU. which would also imply that the country would be able to start closing some of the other chapters that are, you know, technically ready to be closed. Mm-hmm. Because there are 33 chapters currently. Many of those are already there. However, there was a new European methodology which has been adopted a few years ago, where basically the country cannot move forward without the progress made with respect to the rule of law. Mm-hmm. This is why, again, you know, overcoming the challenges that exist within the rule of law is, you know, particularly important.
And yeah, that point about rule of law is interesting. Final exams recently happened here at SAIS, and for one of my final projects, I was doing a research project into organized crime in the Balkans, which has been an issue all across the region for the past couple of decades. What are you doing, what is your administration doing to fight organized crime, to deal with organized crime, both in the Balkans and in Montenegro specifically?
Well, I think that organized crime is obviously not a challenge which exists only in Montenegro. It is, mm-hmm. It is a wider problem, it is a global problem. What I think, you know, the country was quite successful in over the last few years is basically, you know, moving out from the judiciary people that have been compromised, that were there appointed to fight organized crime and corruption, but, you know, some of them, according to the facts and the evidence that we got from our international partners, and this is where I think Europol, FBI, instead of fighting organized crime and corruption, some of them were basically, you know, part of the organized crime and corruption. And I think that, you know, some of those people are now being taken out from the system, which also means that the trust of the people, you know, normal people, general public, is improving. And I think, you know, it's very difficult to strengthen the trust of the people vis-a-vis institutions. It, you know, this is something which you can easily break, but it's very difficult to be sort of recovered. And I think this is exactly what is currently happening in Montenegro. So I'm very proud of some of the achievements. I think that over the last few months, the Parliament of Montenegro was able also to appoint some new people at the high, you know, at different positions within our judiciary, you know, some fresh blood, which is, you know, very successfully now tackling some of the organized crime and corruption issues in the country. And, you know, that is important. And this is exactly when I, you know, when I speak of the rule of law, those are the things that matter.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, trust in institutions is really important for any democracy. I know that's something that we're having issues with in the United States, as trust in institutions is getting worse and worse among the general public. And so it's good to see an upward trend in other countries. Now, one of the biggest challenges in Europe right now is the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which you mentioned earlier. I know when that happened a little bit more than 2 years ago now, it had huge ramifications for American politics. And Montenegro is, of course, much closer to the fighting. How do the people of Montenegro, how does the government of Montenegro perceive that conflict?
Well, when it happened, I think that, you know, when it happened, I remember I was a minister in the government. I was an economy minister, and you know, one of the first things that the government did was to join the sanctions that the EU imposed against Russia. And you know, just to mention that Montenegro for the last almost 10 years has been fully aligning its foreign security policy with one of the EU. On top of it, Montenegro has decided to open up its borders fully to Ukrainian refugees. And at one point, in per capita terms, Montenegro was the country with the highest number of Ukrainian people living in Montenegro, almost 10% of the population at one point. You know, this, the fact that the government back then has decided to open up the borders to allow the free access to the labor market, the free access to education, the free access to the healthcare, resonated with many of the Ukrainian people who knew Montenegro, you know, perhaps from the past, because it is, you know, a very popular tourist destination in the Mediterranean. And we are proud of doing that, of being able to support the Ukrainian people in the time of war. Naturally, on top of that, Montenegro, as a part of NATO alliance, has also contributed both bilaterally as well as multilaterally in different ways to, you know, to Ukraine ever since the war has started. So we are doing as much as we can.
Do you see that as a big part of Montenegro's role in the region, is being able to provide assistance to people that need it, you know, right now in Ukraine, but potentially in other places as well?
I think this is something that Montenegro historically has been doing, mm-hmm. also during the Balkan Wars, the civil war in generally the wars in the Balkans, the one in Bosnia, also the one in Kosovo. Montenegro was always a place which has been receiving refugees from, you know, from the other parts of the former Yugoslavia. And, you know, this is exactly what we have done also when it comes to Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is good to hear. So you've been president for about a year now.
Exactly a year.
Yeah,
it's going to be next week, exactly a year. Yeah.
So congratulations
on
that. Well,
thank you very much.
What do you think has surprised you most about becoming president of Montenegro?
I think, you know, I wasn't unfamiliar with the politics. So mm-hmm. as I entered the politics at the level of the minister, and then I also created the party, which was, you know, very important for generally democratic transition of the country. I was also able to lead, you know, the electoral win at the local level for the mayor of the capital city. However, I never became the mayor as I entered the presidential race. And I think that presidential race of the last year was particularly important for democratic development of the country because it really meant the choice between the new Montenegro, the fully Euro-Atlantic Montenegro based on the rule of law and devoted to EU integration and economic development, or, you know, something else. And I think that, you know, the people have chosen this Euro-Atlantic Montenegro, civic Montenegro, based on the rule of law and devoted to EU integration and economic development, which I was heavily promoting. I mean, being the president is not an easy task. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is why I wouldn't really be able to do it without the support of my family. I think that the support of my wife, my kids are still, you know, too too young. But I think that's really what's important, you know, for I guess, everything. And especially, you know, for the jobs that require patience, that require stamina, that required, you know, very difficult decision making.
Yeah, yeah. We've talked about a couple of different policy issues, like organized crime, like the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Are there any other big security challenges that you see in Montenegro, or any other big topics that come to mind as far as challenges that Montenegro is facing in the future?
Right. Well, I think that probably, you know, one of the biggest relates to the cybersecurity. And the country has seen a major attack on its cyberspace mm-hmm. Back in 2022. I think that, you know, this is when the country really realized how important it is to strengthen, you know, that part of our government administration. I think that the country has become more resilient in the meantime, but we wouldn't really be able to do so without the support from our NATO allies. And we are very much grateful for it. But that's still the challenge. I think, you know, we do still have some work to do. That's one. Perhaps, you know, the other thing that I see as a challenge is disinformation and, mm-hmm. and false information. And it's not really a challenge only for Montenegro. I think it's a global challenge. And I think, you know, I think that the countries where perhaps, you know, there are political divisions, you know, societies which are not as cohesive as they can be mm-hmm. are more vulnerable to false information. And I think this is one of the challenges, and this is something that I have been really devoting my attention fully, you know, to make Montenegro a much more cohesive society than what it used to be. I think that's important.
Do you think that is the best way to fight disinformation, is just to focus on sort of the ground up cohesion of the society?
Well, you know, that's definitely, you know, one of the parts, you know, and I think that's ultimately crucial for the long term strategy vis-a-vis the fight against the false information. What is also important is obviously independent media, professional journalism, ethical journalism, I think media literacy generally, so that population is able to recognize what is a true information from, you know, what is a false information. So generally we are, you know, as a society working on many of those aspects.
Okay, yeah. Now, Montenegro has been independent for about 18 years now.
Right.
And it's made a lot of progress in that time, as you've noted. What do you want your country to look like in another 18 years?
I think that, you know, what I would like Montenegro to be is a truly civic country. Mm-hmm. obviously a member of the European Union with a consolidated democracy and consolidated independent institutions, you know, with an increased economic development of the country and improved quality of life for its citizens, a good neighbor, and an active player in the multilateral global world. And those are all, you know, basically the things that I'm, you know, very much devoted to.
Yeah. Now, I've got one final question. What made you interested in politics in the first place? Was it something that you were always interested in from a young age, or is it recent? And what made you really want to get involved?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. I think that, you know, injustice, I guess. I think that Montenegro was relatively unjust place. You know, many people were sort of marginalized, perhaps, or just, you know, didn't have equal opportunities for, you know, for their political opinion, for, you know, perhaps even their national feelings and different things. And that's probably, you know, one thing that I was able to observe, you know, since a young age. That's something that's probably the driving force. Naturally, you know, I went abroad, and I think that I acquired certain knowledge and experience that I was also able to bring back to the community. And so this sense of belonging mm-hmm. to the community, but also a sense of, you know, doing something good for the community is a natural driving force.
Yeah, fighting injustice, that is a good reason to get involved in politics, I think. So those are all the questions I have planned, and we actually do have a little bit of time here. Is there anything else that you'd like to talk about, to address to an American audience, maybe to the people back home?
Well, you know, I definitely enjoyed this discussion.
Yeah.
You know, I think that very important questions, very difficult questions, so thank you for asking them.
Yeah, well, and I appreciate you coming as well. It as a student, I think it's really valuable to, I can say for myself at least, it's important to me to meet people like you that are making a difference out in the world.
I mean, you know, probably one of the best investments in my life was, you know, all those investments that I did in my education. And when I was 19, I actually even studied for a year in this great country. Mm-hmm. Later on, I studied in many other places across the globe. And I think, you know, just acquiring good education is probably the best investment that you can do in your life. So, you know, this is another advice to all the students also here at SAIS, but, you know, across the globe.
Well, President Milanovic, thank you again for coming on the show. I know you have a very busy schedule, so I appreciate you taking the time. It has been an honor, so thank you.
You know, it was my pleasure as well. Thank you very much.
I want to give a big thank you again to President Milanovic for coming on the show. I know he's got a lot going on today, so I do genuinely appreciate him taking the time. I'll soon be graduating from my degree at SAIS, and I have to say that this is probably one of the coolest experiences I've had here. When I helped start this show about 2 years ago, I didn't think I'd have the opportunity to interview a world leader, but here we are. Talking to President Milanovic in particular is really meaningful because I think he represents the next generation, a younger generation of international leadership, and that's what we're all about here at SAIS. This episode was recorded in the Edward P. Joseph Audio-Video Studio in the Bloomberg Center's Media Suite. I'd like to give a special shout-out to Ed Joseph and Brent Kessler for helping put this event together, as well as the fantastic production staff at the Media Suite. I also want to thank the SAIS Foreign Policy Institute for hosting President Milanovic during his visit to the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg Center. I know state visits can be complicated to put together, so I appreciate everyone over there for putting in the hard work. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to rate and review it. And if you'd like to get in touch, you can email us at saisstrategypodcast@gmail.com. That again is SAIS, SAIS, strategypodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram or Facebook at SAIS Strategy Podcast, and you can follow us on X at SAIS Strat Pod. Once again, my name is Eli George for Small World, Big Problems. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next time.